Episode 5. Even though her eyes were open and she was conscious, at least on some level, Liz was drawn into the pageant of memories as the doctor himself recovered what had been forgotten to him. The collage of images made more sense to him than to her, but she understood some of it. The overwhelming image was one of colossal suffering and hopelessness, as though a tragic error had become a fact, as though the very thing that could undo the universe had become the living reality of the universe. She saw some images of his memories only briefly, disjointed images of the living and the dead, and other pieces ran like long tracks, like stories. Yet they came at the speed of thought, and so it was less than a minute later when her mind cleared and she found him looking down at her. His eyes were hollowed by the grief that had come back to him, and yet his face was resolute from the sadness, not beaten by it. But he was suddenly oddly vulnerable as he watched her come back to awareness of the present. She had seen some of the most horrible and tragic moments of his life, and he knew that she knew. For a moment they only looked at each other as the footsteps kept walking. The two security men and whoever or whatever had been with them had moved on. A moment later, a TSRG van drove past on the main street, but neither she nor the doctor moved. All those people... dead. And his voice was also a whisper, a ghost of his normally confident tone. He was shaken by what had come back to him. The memories of horror had left her feeling frightened and exposed, but she knew that the images were even more real to him, not just distant recollections. "You're not alone. I can help you, perhaps offer more than anybody yet. I understand more, don't I?" "Yes, Liz, yes." And then he held her, and she held on to him as it had been done dozens of times before when these dreadful creatures called Daleks had been killing and claiming and killing some more. They lived on the extermination of others. The overpowering directive from his mind that had latched onto hers was completely receded, now that the urgent memories had been recovered and his shock was passing. She could no longer see his mind, but she realized that he was far more than she had ever allowed herself to guess, more long-lived, more passionate to protect the innocent, more wily and freedom-loving and happy than these hateful creatures called Daleks had ever been able to calculate, and more skillful, even though they had made him suffer. "You really are a Time Lord." It was the only word for him, and now she understood it far more. He tightened his arms, and an expression of genuine humility and tenderness filled his eyes. "Just the doctor, Liz. That's good enough." She nodded, her face against his soft jacket, accepting his wishes. She still felt overwhelmed, and so did he, but after a moment he made his voice more resolute. "Come on." The brisk tone dispelled some of the aura of mystery and horrible grandeur. Then he helped her to her feet, but he kept his warm, heavy cape around her. "I think you must be all in, Liz. Have you hurt yourself?" She made herself return to the world as she understood it. She made her tone rueful. "Dr. LeFranc accidentally pushed a box onto my foot. I'm worried about Corporal Boyd."
"Is he guarding your retreat?"
"Yes, back at the pub."
"All right, come on then."
Now her foot hurt very much, but more because of the tightness of the shoe than because of the weight she put on it. He let her lean on him, but it was still slow going, and as he helped her along, she once again felt the wonder of having seen into his memories. He made his voice and manner light.
"You're not going to like it if I carry you back to that pub."
"No," but her voice was small and uncertain. She suddenly felt very shy with him. He was actually a bold and ingenious freedom fighter, like a war hero. The enormity of the tragedies that he'd encountered and the tremendous evil that he dreaded and yet refused to submit to left her feeling quite chastened. She suddenly didn't know how to talk to him.
"Well, if you're not going to make any greater fuss than that,"
and he abruptly swept her up off her feet.
"Now we'll make good time."
He strode up the street with her towards the pub. She still didn't know what to say.
"You're not going soft on me, are you, Liz?"
"No, not at all." But her voice still had the quality of great uncertainty. Humility, she knew, was unbecoming to her, in his opinion. The doctor believed that scientists ought to continually advertise how smart they were, as that was the only way to get what they wanted. Bullying and boasting, he believed, were like sidearms.
One never used them indiscriminately, but it was good to keep them charged up, ready, and prominently displayed. He said no more. He swiftly carried her up the street to the public house, which was now crowded in front, with a police van, several unit vehicles, and an ambulance. A small knot of gesticulating men were discussing something with great energy as they approached. Then they heard the brigadier.
Good heavens, Professor Shaw, what's happened to her?
He disengaged himself from his argument with the police constable and the pub owner and ran to meet them. The doctor ignored the question.
Lethbridge to it. Enough of this nonsense. We must get to TSRG right away.
Miss Shaw, are you all right?
The doctor, brusque and impatient, answered for her.
She'll be all right. Get some ice on that foot. Here.
As he passed her right into the brigadier's arms, the brigadier, startled, stepped back to catch his balance and was suddenly embarrassed. He saw Boyd as Boyd ran up to meet her.
Corporal Boyd! You were charged with seeing to Miss Shaw. See to your duty, man!
And he thrust Liz at Corporal Boyd. Boyd caught her and took her.
Would you please stop passing me around? I can stand up. I need someone to lean on, that's all.
Corporal Boyd gently led her feet back to the ground, mindful of the injured foot. But now it hurt quite a lot. As for him, he had already been seen to by the ambulance personnel. His knuckles were wrapped in tape, and his left eye had been reddened by a fist. His lower lip was split on one side.
You all right?
Right enough. The room is a mess. Everything's smashed. I'll give you my quarters.
The doctor spoke, his voice urgent. And we've got to get out to TSRG.
TSRG is under lockdown, doctor. They went to high alert status as soon as the power failed. Nobody can get in, and nobody can get out.
High alert is reserved for hostile intruders.
Liz spoke up. That power suppression was not an attack against TSRG. It came from them. They're doing something in there that even NATO doesn't know about.
We are powerless to enter until they give the all clear. I cannot override their measures unless you can show me proof that they created the power blackout.
The doctor sighed in resignation. He churned up his thick hair with his hand as he tried to think of any way to get past international protocol. At last he shook his head. Liz was too tired to keep trying to fight without rest.
Let it go until tomorrow. They've got something. Some type of prototype that we saw.
Liz!
The doctor barked. And like a physical wave that swept over her, she was struck silent. It passed after a moment, but she stared at him. That same directive of fear and dread had leaped from him to her, compelling silence. He held her eye for a moment. Then he made his voice quiet.
We saw several TSRG security guards in one of the side lanes. They may have been transporting something dangerous. Perhaps the brigadier and I should go take a look.
The brigadier missed any subtle exchanges between his two scientists.
Whatever you say, Doctor. Corporal Boyd, please see to Miss Shaw. I'll assign a soldier with a rifle to guard her door. No more raids tonight.
Boyd and another soldier quickly moved Liz's bag, a soldier's kit bag, and the other luggage to the smaller room down the hall. Though nearly as large as the front bedroom, these quarters were more Spartan. A single bed, unadorned except for sheets and blankets, faced an old fireplace whose chimney had been cemented closed. A lumpy, aged easy chair had a station by the room's narrow window. The two men brought in the deal table and ladder-back chairs from the front room and set them near the old easy chair. While the other soldier took his place outside the door, Boyd left and shortly returned with a basin of hot water and a small bowl of ice. Apart from some clean undergarments and the silk thermals she'd brought, Liz had only the clothes that she was wearing. She was far too tired to mind sleeping in what she had worn that day, but she knew she would need something fresh for the next day. She sat on the edge of the bed with her shoe off, while Boyd immersed her injured foot into the steaming water. "These temporary assignments are all very well, but I cannot represent UNIT with any credibility if I show up at TSRG tomorrow looking like the little match girl. I need some clothes. Nothing special, just something clean and in good repair."
"I'll see if I can't find you something. The landlord's probably got some spares and left behinds."
He left while she soaked her foot. A quarter hour later, he entered with a small stack of clothes.
"Clean and mended."
He set the clothing on the table and then knelt down and lifted her foot from the basin.
Well, it's bruised all right. No matter what we do now, it'll be stiff come morning. He glanced up at her.
We'll ice it and then let it rest.
As he worked, rubbing ice over the foot, she tried to think of something to engage her mind. With a slight start, she realized what they had to do.
Corporal, can you do one more thing tonight?
What's that?
Get in touch with Unit's Information Service. Find out where Doctors LeFranc and Schepansky have come from. I'm certain that for Schepansky, at least, there had to be a place in the interim between university and here.
Still swiping a wrapped piece of ice over the top of her foot, he glanced up at her.
Would it matter?
I'm certain that neither of them is clever enough to... She caught herself. She did not want to talk about that odd, machine-like thing that had prompted such fear in the doctor.
Neither of them is clever enough to suppress power in such a wide field. Perhaps they are using borrowed technology.
We ought to tell the doctor in the brig about those hogs.
Yes, first thing in the morning. They're out looking over the village right now.
He finally finished with the foot. The swelling was down and the purple bruise was less brilliant and shiny.
I'll get right on that information that you want.
Thank you, Corporal. Good night.
He said good night and took out the basin and bowl, but his eyes were slightly rueful. As far as he was concerned, the beginnings of a friendship had been interrupted by that power outage. She was too tired to think about it, and she prepared for bed. As soon as the lights were out and she had bundled down under the heavy blankets, she became more aware of the sounds of soldiers in the cold darkness outside. They were still investigating all that had happened. The power outage, the rioters who had seemed directed to come after her, the lightning-like flashes across the sky. It made for a certain unending clamor, but the sound of male voices on the street below exchanging reports and talking on radios was comforting. Normally, Liz disapproved of Unit's high-handedness, but now she was glad that they had commandeered the public house. She wanted to feel protected. A tugging and pulling on her foot brought her back from a jumbled dream of something silvery and metallic that glided past her. It had a domed head and a protruding directional device like an eye stalk or motion detector. It appeared to be searching for her. Other metal shapes glided off in different directions all around her.